Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MAI and Mouse Fan Travel, who offer you top-notch service and expertise for all your vacation needs. And if it's time for your next Disney fix, then it's time to visit the vacation planners at MAI-travel.com, MouseFanTravel.com, or click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
I'm Brian Marks from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 113 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, we're getting into late October, and pretty soon Halloween is approaching. And, you know, I remember one time we ran the Wicked Half Marathon in Salem, Mass. Around this time, and that was pretty fun. I'd like to encourage our listeners to run in some Halloween-themed races. I think they're a lot of fun, don't you think?
I wish I was doing one. I'm not really doing one, but I'd love to see those pictures on our Mickey Miles Podcast Facebook page. And I don't know if you're like me, Mike, but I have a lot of Boo to You music on my iPod this time of year. Happy Halloween. Do you put any Disney Halloween music?
Well, you know, I have one of the CDs that has Disney party music, and I actually will switch from my iPhone to my Shuffle, and I'll listen to those songs on my weekly runs, because my weekly runs are about an hour, and I could listen to them, and I think it's kind of cool. So, yes, I do.
I don't know. That song from the Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party, The Parade, just gets stuck in my mind, so now it's going to be in my mind for the rest of the show. So maybe you can use that when we're when you do the music for the show. Boo to you. So I have a shout-out, and the shout-out is to John Maloney, who's one of our listeners, who is, at this point, has completed, hopefully when this airs, the Atlantic City Marathon. And we know lots and lots of people who completed the half marathon and the marathon and other races in Atlantic City. Also in Chicago, there are lots of races going on today. So yay to you, John, and everybody who, it seems like tons and tons of races this past weekend. So, Mike, before we go on, I just want to remind people that we have announced our meet for the Wine and Dine Half Marathon. It's going to be Saturday, November 9th at Seabreeze Point on the Boardwalk, which is right outside the International Gateway. And it's going to be at 11 a.m., and there's bakery there. And so if you do your 5K, you can come see us after that. You might want to take a shower first, and we'd love to see you. And we will have a thing up on our Facebook page so you can RSVP. But come on and join us. Ready for more questions?
I'm ready for questions. Would you like to start us off?
I would be happy to. So this is from Bob Frain, and he says, "Hi, Michelle and Mike. I was listening to episode 105, and I have a few comments. On the color flags of the race, I know that they've been using this at Disneyland since at least 2007. So I had mentioned that Disney was talking about having race flags to talk about the heat index and how safe or unsafe the race was. I only saw green ones for the Tower of Terror. But anyway, he says, this is my first Disneyland half, and the temperature at the start of the race was in the mid-90s. Once the sun came up, it got very hot quickly. When I finished, it was 107. Wow, I don't remember that. Anyway, the day before the race, they made an announcement that the race was at a red flag, and if they went to black, the race would become a fun run, and the clocks would be turn off, and there would be no official times. They didn't do it, and to my knowledge, they've not done it ever. As for etiquette, one piece of advice that I give is before you go to weave around someone, look over your shoulder and make sure that someone isn't there already, just like changing lanes in a car. Look first. Same goes for you if you're going to spit or do a snot rocket. Look before you do so it doesn't end up on someone's leg, arm. Hashtag awkward moment. So anyway, his question is, I was chatting with runners the other night about the costs of doing races. Let's face it, races aren't cheap. I've seen the Disneyland half go from $80 in 2007 to $150 in 2013. I understand the demand is high for these Disney races, but what's the price point that people will start to rethink running these races? I feel $150 for a half marathon is a bit steep, even if it is Disney. To be fair, the Rock and Roll series is now approaching that level, but at least they offer discounts. Thoughts? Mike, this is something that we talk about all the time with these races.
I think that I remember my first half marathon was $78. My first Disney World half marathon was $78. My first Disney race was $25. So I've seen it go up quite a bit. I think that, like anything else, whatever the market yields is whatever the market yields. I think that there are obviously some flags that would show up to indicate when the price is going up a little bit. And I think that happened about a year ago. I remember commenting to you and several others how long it took for Disney to sell out the January races. And I think that that may have done something to spur them on into doing something differently, like the Dopey. And with the Dopey, there was a peaked interest. And so the rush to register was quick. And I believe that adding the 10K to the Disneyland half, making it the Disneyland Dumbo Double Dare, and adding the 10K to the Princess Half Marathon, making it the Glass Slipper Challenge, I think that that did a very good job in giving more interest to these races. Otherwise, people will be making choices. And I see a lot of people making choices. The ones who are making the choices are the veterans, the ones who have said, you know, I've done this before. I need to make a choice. We saw some friends who normally we saw a lot of our friends at the Tower of Terror race last year. We didn't see as many this year. They decided, you know, I think if I had my choice, I think I'm going to do Wine and Dine. So I think that people will be making choices as these prices go up. And I think that they're pretty close to hitting the threshold. Michelle?
You know, I think this is going to be something that I'm sure Disney discusses and looks at all the time. I did a half marathon this past spring with my buddies, Show Notes Guy Rich and Charlie, the Big Lake half marathon up at Lake Winnipesaukee. I think it was $80 to do it. However, there was no entertainment on the course. There's beautiful scenery, but you know, in terms of what happened on the course, it was a lot different. The race shirt wasn't as nice. The medal wasn't as nice as Disney. So you are paying for all those things, and you're paying for you know, the expo and all the other things that you get. However, my big worry is that the 5K is going up too much. And here's my worry: I think that it's a wonderful family event. And if you have a family of four and you're doing the 5K, it could be upwards now of $200 to do this race, which is, you know, an hour-long experience and a T-shirt and a rubber medal. And I just would encourage Disney to keep that price low just so families can do that. I think it's a wonderful introduction to running for kids and how exciting running can be. It's also a great introduction for the people who are doing the Couch to 5K. And we don't want to price those beginning runners out of that wonderful 5K experience at Disney.
One more thing I want to mention, Michelle, and this is something that we recently saw in final race instructions, and I'm not sure if it was for the Tower or for the Wine and Dine, but Disney sent out a message that said at the end of the race, everyone will get one bottle of water. They'll get one bottle of Powerade, and I kind of took exception to that because if you're going to raise the prices, then you're going to offer us less. I don't like that at all. I think that if they're going to raise the prices, I think what they need to do is they need to think about what other little trinkets they're going to give us. And it's not going to hurt to talk to their sponsors and say, maybe you can throw in some coupons when we get the race gear. Maybe you can throw in like 10% off or whatever to encourage our runners, our participants, our customers to visit you and to become a customer. I think that there has to be some kind of addition to. I mean, if you're going to raise prices, you can't raise prices and offer less. So,
well, I mean, I have a hard time believing that if somebody needed another bottle of Powerade, that they would say no.
Right.
These races, the past four races that I've done have been so hot. I mean,
yes.
Are they going to say no? There must be some form of abuse I don't know. I mean, do you think people are taking six bottles? I've never seen that happen myself.
It's the honor system. Obviously, yeah. It's the honor system. But what they're doing is they're encouraging people to, and I think on the other hand, I mean, kind of hard on them, but on the other hand, I think they're saying, you know, if you hydrate, if you're smart enough hydrating before and during the race, then you won't need five bottles of Powerade. And you're right. I don't see anyone taking more than one or two. And actually, how many people can drink more than one or two? I just think that it's really going to be interesting to see what happens over the next 5 years, to see how the prices go up and to see how the registration goes along and see how long it takes. I'm always curious every year to watch to see how quickly the January races fill up, because those are the most popular ones, really. So We'll see what happens. That was a good question. Our next question comes from Mark from Philly, who says, I recently started running. I just finished my first 5K last week and achieved my goal of finishing under a 10-minute mile pace, 9:24 per mile. Good job, Mark. My next goal is a Disney half and or the 10-miler in 2014. I plan on running local races as part of my training, but my love for Disney has me set on a Run Disney race to be my reward for the hard work ahead. I want to start planning for my trip for those events, and I'm wondering when Disney announces those dates and when registration begins. I know they fill fast and don't want to miss out like I did last year. Also, I will be coming solo, so I've been thinking about joining a running team so I had some new friends for the races. Thanks for the great show, as you've given me plenty of information and motivation as I start my journey. So Mark wants to know when Disney announces running dates and when registration begins. Historically, Mark, they announce anywhere from 9 to 12 months ahead. And that's basically they usually announce 30 to 60 days before registration begins. But that's been the past. We can't say for sure that will happen in the future, but usually they announce between 9 and 12 months ahead. Michelle?
What do you mean 30 to 60 days before registration begins? For the next year.
So for, you're right. So for instance, for Wine and Dine. So Wine and Dine's coming up in November, and they may announce the Wine and Dine 2014 dates anywhere between November and maybe January. And whenever they announce it, they might say, okay, here's the date. Registration opens, 30 days from this date or whatever. That's what usually happens.
So in terms of registration, I know that, for example, I don't know that there's a set date ahead of time, but I know that at the end of January, they announce that they open registration for the Dumbo Double Dare. So it's about 7 months ahead of time that registration's open. And in the past few races, it's been open a little bit earlier for Disney Vacation Club members and annual pass owners. But when you go to a race like the Terra Terra, I'm looking at the official race book right now that they handed out at the expo. It has the races listed all the way to next Disneyland half marathon, which is August 28th through 34th, 2014. So you can go on the Run Disney website and it will give you a list of what's coming up. In terms of planning your, what about planning your, where you're going to stay, Mike? When do you think you should plan that?
That's the big problem. I think that when you know when the races are going to be, then you now need to plan when you're going to travel, and you have to think about, okay, now I need to let my job know when I'm going to be out. I need to start looking at if I need to fly. I need to start looking at airfare. I need to start looking at where I would like to stay and things like that.
You got to contact MEI Travel.
MEI, Mouse Fan Travel. You need to think about, okay, if I'm going to run on this day, when do I have to be there to pick up my race packet? You have to think about the day before, how you're going to, what your schedule is going to be. There's so much. So as far as I'm concerned, on the day that I find out the race that I'm going to attend, that's when I start planning. And within a week of that announcement, I'd like to have my plan set. And you and I know we do that. As soon as we know we're going to attend a race, we start putting our plans in place. And it's just like if you're planning a regular Disney vacation, you should plan at least 6 to 9 months ahead. And especially if you want to get the room that you want and things like that.
I think it's good. Good advice. So you can actually book your room, start paying for it, and then register a few months later and then start paying for that. So you're kind of spreading it out.
Yes, and my suggestion always is that when you book a room, you usually have to give a deposit of 1 day. So every month you pay for another day. So by the time your vacation is there, your room is all paid for.
I like it. All right, the next question is from Lauren, and she says, I just finished listening to your podcast on the Tower 10 Miler Part 2. I heard a few times about how there were no food choices for vegetarians. I myself am not a vegetarian, but my husband is. And after a race, we went to Backlot Express. It was right as you get out of the package pickup next to Star Tours. They have grilled vegetable sandwich for $8.99. Basil Asiago artisan bread, fresh mushrooms, red peppers, zucchini, tomato, watercress, cheese, sun-dried tomato, pesto with carrot sticks or french fries. It's one of my husband's favorite sandwiches. And they took the magic band. Hope this helps for future races. Thank you very much, Lauren. I did forget about that option, and I know our friend who was on the show, Melissa Ionetta, I believe she went over there too. I think in general, what I was speaking to is that I know I went over to the Tower Terra area, and there aren't many vegetarian options over there. And I just know as somebody who visits the park, not when I'm running with my kids who are both vegetarians, that often I have to hike somewhere to get a vegetarian option. And that's the piece that I think Disney's doing better throughout all the parks offering vegetarian options. But, when you're in a certain part of the park and you want to eat, you don't want to have to hike over. Having said that, I did find, I can't remember, Mike, the name of the eateries, that whole little area right outside the Tower of Terror.
Sunset Marketplace?
Yes, I think it is. So I did find a veggie burger over there, so I was able to have that. But what do you think, Mike? You're not a vegetarian.
No, I want to thank Lauren for that information. And it's true. As I'm reading it, I'm thinking, wow, I've been to several Tower of Terror races. One was a 13K about 4 or 5 years ago, and in all cases, I never left Sunset Boulevard after the race. I mean, you're tired, and you're thinking, oh, you want to ride, a couple of, you want to eat along Sunset Boulevard, you ride the tower or whatever, but.
But if you did do your package pickup, it was definitely right there. But Mike, you've hung around with me enough in the parks to know that it can be a chore to be a vegetarian at Walt Disney World. I know, I mean, you know that I've had to look at them, and there may just be one option. And what if you don't like that one option? So I mean, I know it's a choice to be a vegetarian, but
yeah, it's very hard, and I feel for you sometimes, and it's I feel guilty because I have all these options and you don't. But
yeah, it's my choice. But I think Disney is listening, and I do see that there are more choices. So thank you, Lauren.
Come over to the dark side, Michelle.
No, thank you. I've been a vegetarian for 20 years now. I don't think it's going to change.
Next question comes from Susan Hunter from Mount Laurel, New Jersey. She says, hi, Mike and Michelle. My husband and sister-in-law are both signed up for Dopey in January, and I was thinking of trying to volunteer during the race weekend. I did find a spot on the Run Disney website where you can get a small amount of information, but it doesn't appear that you can sign up yet. Do you know anyone who has done this? How far in advance do they typically open volunteer slots? Can you request your event and work assignments? Is it fun? Any information would be greatly appreciated. Maybe this could be a show topic idea. Thanks for all you do, and congrats on your recent success at Dumbo, Double Dare, and Tower of Terror. And Susan makes a great point, Michelle. We need to have some friends, and we have several friends who have volunteered at Disney races, and we need to have them come on and explain how it all works.
So, Mike, this is something that we've had on our radar for quite a while, and we do have a lot of friends who have volunteered at these races, and I would love to have people come on and talk about it. If you go to Run Disney, there's a link there. There's also, if you go to ESPNWOS.disney.go.com/about/volunteer. You can see all the different opportunities there at the wide world of sports, including the Disney races. And these races would not run without volunteers. They're vitally important. And usually they give you some sort of a swag, like a T-shirt or a jacket or something like that. And, you know, from everything that I hear, it's fantastic. And we will definitely have a volunteer show in the not too near future. Right, Mike?
Yes, we will. And I was just thinking about we ran into so many people at the Tara Tara who we know are volunteers, and we have several people who we will be calling upon. I want to just throw a shout out to Mary Jane Cancel and Nancy Cancel, who I saw on the race course, and I saw them and they were cheering me on. I want to thank them, and also I think Philip Taylor, who
Phil
was at
Taylor.
The meet. I know Phil does a lot of stuff there, and I believe Bonnie and Andy are going to be doing some stuff too. So we're going to try to get one, two, or several of them on a future show, and we'll give us some information as to what goes on with being a Disney volunteer. And you don't have to reside in Florida to be a volunteer at a Florida race, or you don't have to be a resident of California to volunteer at a California race. So we'll be working on that show.
But here's the thing too, Sue, they fill up quickly. The races, just like when you're running them, the volunteer spots fill up quickly. So we'll do that soon. Okay, the next question, Mike, I think this has Mike written all over it because I know you're an expert in this. It is from Krista Allen Wilson. And unfortunately, this is sad to report, but she says, I've been running for 5 years, and today was the first time I've ever been bitten by a dog. Chased and barked at many times, but never bitten. I wonder if you might share some advice with your listeners about what to do to prevent this and what if it happens. I'm feeling bummed that now my running doesn't seem so safe anymore and that my brand new Balega socks are ruined. Any advice would be appreciated. I'm so sorry to hear that, Krista.
Boy, Krista, I can tell you, we could spend a show on some experiences that I've had that I've talked to Michelle about dealing with dogs. One thing that worked for me, and I don't know if it's still around, it's called a pet trainer, and it's a little blue device. It's about the size of a mouse that you would use for your computer, but it's a little bit smaller. And it takes a 9-volt battery. And what it does, it's been used by trainers to change behaviors in animals. It emits a high-frequency sound that dogs can hear. And if you are being chased by a dog and you turn around and you point it at the dog, and I think it's good up to about 20 feet, you press it, and actually I've seen it work up to 50 feet, you press it and in a very strong voice say no, the animal will react kind of funny, and it may take a few times to do it, but it has worked for me in the past. The other thing is that I've run straight at dogs yelling like a maniac, and the dog turns around and runs for cover, but I don't think that works for everybody. But I think that it would be good to look into something like that. Michelle?
Well, I don't have any personal experience with being chased by dogs. It sounds like you didn't either until very recently, Krista. But I looked just quickly. Runner's World actually has an article called Mean Dogs Bite. And just very quickly, some of the things they say, if you're chased, slow down, slow your run to a walk. Turn and walk in the opposite direction. Don't stare at the dog. Be boring, stand very still, don't cower, use a deep, firm voice, as Mike said, if the dog really comes at you, spray it with water if you have a bottle, and report it. I mean, you definitely, if you got bitten, you should definitely report it and see if you can find the owner and go get a rabies shot, too, because, if it broke the skin, you don't want to be in danger, so I'd definitely go and get medical help right away.
Two quick stories. I think this would be interesting for my for our listeners. In running in New Hampshire, there are some obviously rural areas, and especially on a early Sunday morning, you don't see much traffic. And one Sunday morning, I was running. I was doing probably about a 7 or 8 mile run, and I was running along the road, and about 50 yards ahead of me was a wolf or a coyote. I don't remember which, but she or he was pretty big and just standing in the middle of the road. And I'm thinking, I probably don't want to take a chance. So I did exactly what you said, Michelle. I turned around and I just said, I'm going to go the other way. And luckily, the animal couldn't smell me. But again, I don't know if the animal would run off, but don't even attempt to do anything other than protect yourself. And the other kind of funny story, and this is just something I'd love to tell people. I was training for this 2006 half marathon, and it was late October, and I was running real early in the morning, and I was running, and I had to turn up this rural road, and just before I turned up the rural road, I heard a wolf howling, and I'm thinking, well, that's pretty cool. It was dark, it was rural, there was hardly anybody around. And then it stopped. Then the howling stopped, and I'm thinking, okay, if the wolf is howling, then it's probably sitting. But if it's not howling, it's probably moving. So I ran up that road. I had to go to another main road. I ran up that road like an owl, always turning around, thinking, okay, what am I going to do if I turn around and I see something coming at me? So it's just a point that you always need to be aware, and it's always good to figure out what you would do if confronted by an animal. So be on the lookout and always be prepared.
But definitely, if the dog broke your skin, go seek medical treatment. I'm sure we don't have to say that. And I know that people are going to, when we post the show, people are going to write their suggestions on Facebook too. So please
And unfortunately, if the dog breaks skin, then things are going to have to take on. Our next question comes from Laura Boyce Baker. She says, hi, I just wanted to share something we learned at the Princess. My mother came with us and uses a wheelchair. We stayed at Riverside, and all race transportation were Mears buses that aren't wheelchair accessible. The people at the resort kept calling someone who told them that every other bus was wheelchair accessible, but it wasn't. We got a special bus to take us to the expo, but the morning of the race, I was afraid of not getting there and left her behind. She ended up getting them to call a special bus for her and got there in time. The bus, it wasn't as easy as they said it would be. Just wanted to share with you in case someone else had a wheelchair spectator. Good luck tonight and hope to meet you at Wine and Dine. I think that's a good thing to keep in mind, Michelle. As much as we know that Disney takes care of those who require wheelchairs to visit the parks, I don't know exactly what type of steps are taken for wheelchair spectators. I don't see too many on the races I've been at, but I'm sure that there are people who are in wheelchairs who want to route their friends and relatives. And my guess is that there are buses that will be available for wheelchair transportation, but it probably will not be the buses that, for instance, the bus that you and I took to the Tower of Terror race. So I think that the buses, that's a good question that I think everybody should be aware of. And if you have any questions like that, I would suggest sending a message to Run Disney, sending them an email message and finding out what they have planned. And what we'll try to do is we'll try to follow up on this ourselves. And I believe that'll do it for this edition of Questions. So for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road.
The Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI and Mouse Fan Travel, and there's no time like the present to think about your next Disney trip, and no one better to make it come true than the vacation planners at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. So when you're ready for your next visit to see Mickey, first visit MEI-travel.com, MouseFanTravel.com, or click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at Facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at Twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.